things that have been said to me.
I'm just going to say I'm with Martin Morgan at Black Rock Fishery, near Chepstow. I'm okay to say near Chepstow.
Monday,
January the 21st, I think. Right. Okay.
Yeah, this fishery was...
I'm going to sit a bit closer.
There were three fisheries on the Severn Estuary, the Esk District, Severn District and the Wye District. So it was basically that the estuary, there was lines drawn on the estuary, and you'd have the Severn, the Esk and the Wye districts. And people have often, you know, sort of misled into thinking we were fishing on the Wye, because people would be told they fish on the Wye, but they would actually say in the Wye district. The Black Rock Glaive Net fishery is the last fishery remaining on what was fished in the Wye district, with stop boats, tuck nets, seine nets, glaive nets actually on the Wye. But we fish in the estuary, and it's a defined area called Gruggy Rocks, and that's the last of the Wye district. So, fishermen from the past, there was a guy called Ron Williams, and I actually had his licence. When Ron dropped the licence, he wasn't actually dead. He was one of the few that sort of give up a licence without dying. But Ron was a character, he's an ex-Royal Marine. And one of the stories he told me years ago was that when he was a boy growing up in the village, he came home on a weekend on a Sunday with a salmon under his arm that he'd found in one of the pools, brought it home to the house, and his father gave him a good hammering. And I said, well, why did he do that? He said, it wasn't for bringing the fish home at all, it was for bringing it home on a Sunday.
Oh, because it's Sunday.
It's Sabbath. So it was the Sabbath night, and sort of he gave him a, not a hammering, but a clip around the ear, and it was purely because he did it on a Sunday. Mentioning Sundays, Doug Brown, another old fisherman, a picture of him on the wall there through his years. Dougie was a keen fisherman, sort of started off when he was a young boy, sort of coming down with the older fishermen, sort of looking after the boat, and it was a habit of them to go across the estuary from Black Rock to the English side. There's a hotel on the what they call the New Passage Hotel, and they would go over there for a pint on a Sunday, and any other day they could as well, I think, but especially on Sunday because Wales was dry, and pubs weren't allowed to open on a Sunday, and Dougie used to say they would go across in the boat, row across on the path of the New Passage, and Doug would be left at the pill there on the other side to look after the boat once they went in for a booze up and then come back. And they would also, they would, with the boat, they would go upstream as well, and there's a pub at, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a pub, what's it called? Anyway, it wasn't unusual for them to sort of, you know, travel around the estuary, sort of, you know, for their fun and sort of having a drink and meeting other fishermen. Yeah, it was a different time. And Ron, what else did Ron get up to? Sort of another story, Bob Leonard and Pete Leonard were fishermen in my day, and their father Grantley also fished. Grantley was a bit of a character. Bob used to say he liked a beer. He was a butcher, a coalman, sort of everything really, you know, jack of all trades, but also a fisherman. And when Grantley died, on the day he died, there used to be a path from Black Rock through to Portsquin Subrock. But you get a car along before the cliff all fell in, and they were taking Grantley's coffin along the cliff path there, and it was, I always think of it as Grantley's last fish, because as they were going across up the path, they looked over to what we call the salmon pools, and there was a fish kicking up in the pool. Bob said he looked at Pete looked at Bob. And Peter ran back to the house, got his waders and his net, and went down and picked the fish up on the day of Grantley's funeral.
That's fantastic.
Sorry, what a good story. Yeah, I told you the one about Bob and the
Prince Philip.
Bob was with, you know, back in the 50s when my great grandfather caught the monster fish. I told you that story. He actually said that the following day he went down there and he seen an even bigger fish. And he said he was stood there in the same place in the hole, what we call the hole, just off Subrum. And a fish come through at about half tide. And he said the water, as the fish was coming through the shallows, was going as high as the top of a Land Rover, sort of. With the power of the fish going through, and he reckons that was bigger.
Sounds like a shark.
Yeah, a big old fish. So,
have you ever found any unusual fish out there?
The most unusual fish I ever caught out there was a common carp in the Severn Estuary, which is, you know, I've only ever heard of it or seen one once, and it was on an occasion that my brother and I had been fishing down the hole again, down off Subrook, and we caught a salmon. We had a salmon with us, and we were coming back. We packed the boat up in the bay at Black Rock, and we're walking past what we call the pool, and there was a fish moving in the pool. I can see the mark of it, sort of a bit of a ripple on the surface. So I opened the net out and jumped in, scooped the fish up. And to my great surprise, at the bottom of the net was a carp about four and a half, 5 pound. And it's not something you would usually get in the Severn Estuary, but at that time we were having torrential rain, constant torrential rain. And when we were actually fishing in the estuary, you'd be stood mid-channel and looking back upstream to the old bridge, and it would just be like a forest with the amount of wood washed out of the rivers. Was in there, you know, there was so much wood being washed out, so much fresh water coming into the estuary.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just hundreds and hundreds of trees and branches, and you know, you name it, it was in there. Beer garden tables, you know. So what had happened there was a fish somewhere along the line had been washed out of a river, sort of.
Like someone's pond.
It's a bit the most unusual fish I've ever seen out there. Yeah, we've seen porpoise out there, you know, sort of whilst we've been going fishing. Seals have come through. One day I wasn't actually fishing, but there's three or four of them stood in what we call the gut, and there was a massive seal went through there, sort of there wasn't much water. How we got through there I don't know, but it went between the fishermen, sort of, and it was as big as a fisherman as well.
Oh,
it was huge. But we often see a seal out there during the season.
I noticed there was somebody put something up on one of your Facebook posts, and it was a woman talking about nets at Camp Road or something. I can't remember the quite.
Yeah, she bought my great grandfather's my grandparents' house, 13 Camp Road, which, you know, say back in the day was called HQ. And there would have always been laid nets at the back, sort of left there. And when they bought the house, there must have been a couple of old nets left there. But yeah, the back kitchen was where they brought the fish and put them in a tin bath, sort of back in the day, sort of. But that, the back of that garden opens out onto the Subrook camp, and then it was a short walk then for them down onto the cliff, down onto what we call the Winkle Beds. The Winkle Beds, which is a little reef basically right in front of the house, sort of thing, in the estuary.
Do people go winkle picking then?
Winkle bed. No. There were winkles there, not in any great quantities when I was a kid. I mean, you did see the shells, and you could, if you wanted to, get some, but I've never done it. But somebody at some point in time must have, you know, collected winkles down there. The pollution situation down there was so bad, I can't imagine in the 60s and 70s that anybody would have wanted to eat a winkle.
Is that because of the shipbuilding nearby?
No, it was the paper mill discharge pipe.
Was
not too far from there.
Yeah.
And that area was heavily polluted, very heavily polluted. And you had Britannia Sink in the estuary opposite. And I read a book recently, a Greenpeace book, and it recommended that well, basically you don't eat the fish, or if you did, you don't eat very much of it, you know, sort of, you know, the flounders, you know, things that live in the estuary, shellfish definitely would be a big no-no.
Yeah.
Sort of, so...
Did anyone... I was speaking to somebody last week, and his great-grandfather used to climb the cliffs that overlook the Wye.
Right.
Towards Chepstow for seagull's eggs.
Yeah.
Did anyone ever do that?
Yeah, that was my great-grandfather, William Corbin. Their family is from Chepstow, and he got his name, nickname Nestor, from his habit of climbing the cliffs in Chepstow, collecting seagull's eggs. And yeah, and he used to do that, and also used to dive or jump off the old railway bridge crossing the Wye as well. He also, with Nestor, William Corbin, my great-grandfather, there's a rock named after him out in the hole, what we call the hole. And Nestor's Rock is the name of the rock, and all it is really is a small rock, about 3 foot by 3 foot, 18 inches high. And he was... quite short. He was perhaps I don't know exactly, but perhaps 5'4", 5'5", a wiry little fella, and he would always be last out the boat, and he would always stand on that rock because it just allowed him to get out of the boat a little bit earlier, sort of, you know, because you know, when you start fishing, the water is sort of up to your top of your chest waders. But it's Nestor's Rock, and that rock is named after him.
Do you know anything about the fisheries that are, you know, downstream, like Goldcliff and...
No, I don't know. I don't know a huge amount about them, really. They were mainly basket fisheries, and...
When, by that, do you mean like putcher rents?
Putchers.
Yeah.
Yeah, conical baskets, originally made from willow and hazel. There would be hundreds of baskets in some ranks, set into a scaffold, usually facing the ebb tide. They are set on a slight incline, and the salmon swim in. They've got no reverse gear, they can't get back out. The tide goes out, and the fisherman comes along and collects the catch. The ones in sort of recent times, not recent times, in memory then, the Undy Putcher Rank, the Porton Putcher Rank, and the Goldcliff Putcher Rank. There's three main ones, and I know that the Undy Rank was, what happened there was that the number of baskets was reduced down to 150 baskets perhaps in the 60s by the Natural Rivers Authority, and it became uneconomic to use. Porton, I'm not sure when that closed, but Goldcliff closed in 1995, bought out by angling interests and the Environment Agency, but closed down, all never to return. The other basket fishery was not salmon fishery, it was putts or kipes. They were medieval baskets, fished in groups of perhaps 6, 7, 8, and they were used to catch whitefish, made from hazel and willow as well. In three sections, I can't remember the four wheel, I can't remember the names of them, but a kipe or putt was used to catch whitefish and shrimp. Same thing applies, you would face the ebb tide, and the fish were pushed in by the tide, and then the fishermen would come along at low tide when they're dry and take the end basket off and tip the catcher. We found baskets buried in the clay that, well, are kipes and puts. So these things are hundreds, if not 1,000 years old, on the estuary.
Just amazing. Did you ever lay eel traps on the reens?
No. I've never trapped fish in the reens, but, as a kid, we would catch sticklebacks and eels and newts and the like in the reens. They seemed to be a lot cleaner back then, but I've never seen locally anybody trap fish like that. No. We used to fish as kids. We'd go fishing in the pills, we used to call them, sort of, you know, Saint Pierre pill was a good one, a sort of very natural sort of pill, not been evened out, sort of, you know, sort of scraped out. It was just like a meandering sort of brook, really, but still a pill. And we'd fish with a rod and line for, you'd get flounders and little eels and things up in those. The only other fishing we really done, sort of, you know, obviously rod and line fishing, but we'd also go congering years ago, sort of out on the Bedwins at low tide, and that involved walking out to rocky areas in the estuary with a bar, iron bar, and poking it under a rock, rattling the rock about, and then hopefully there'd be an eel under there, and he'd come out and you'd take it and kill it for the table.
What, into a net?
No, just that it would wriggle out onto the stones, onto the shingle or whatever, and they'd just dump him on the head and take him off.
You'd have to be quick, wouldn't you?
No, once they're out there, they've got nowhere to go with it.
They're really quick.
No.
Is a conger eel different to an eel?
Just bigger, generally.
Bigger, okay.
Sort of, so.
You wouldn't get those up the reens
in? No, not on a reen. No, you'd have a green eel, what you call a green eel, and silver eels in reens, and elvers would live in reens. So.
But do you know that reens, they're very, you know, they're unique to this area, aren't they, really? So is it something as a kid, children did? They just played in and around the reens?
Yeah, I think
were there
would,
many reens? They have different names.
No, I can't think of any names for reens at all. It would just be pills. I mean, and the pills, all the reens run out of the pills and into the estuary. As far as the Black Rock lave net fishing grounds go in the surrounding areas, I mean, you've got Saint Pierre pill, and reens would run into that. The pill is the outlet to the estuary, isn't it? But the reens run into the pill, and then you've got what we call little pill, again reens run into that, and then you've got Caldecott pill, and then you might have got next after that going back that way again towards Chepstow, so you've got Mathin pill, that west of the Sebrook, you've got Caldecott pill, Collister pill, and then Mager pill. There might be a couple more further west again, but basically all the reeds run into those, and that's the outlet to the estuary. It's quite interesting, Caldecott pill, when the Troggy River, Troggy, TROGGY, was diverted, don't ask me when, then it was diverted into Caldecott pill. And Caldecott pill runs out across the foreshore through the seawall and then out across the mud to the Black Bedwins, and then empties, you know, a mile offshore into a fishing place we call the Luby, which is a pretty popular, used to be a pretty popular fishing place. Out there you've got various gullies that used to be used for fishing, for whitefish, and one is called the Cannonball Gut. Cannonball Gut, gut is a name we use for a channel, basically.
Is that G-U-T-T?
Yeah, G-U-T, just gut.
Okay.
And that's a channel used for, we fish in. And that Cannonball Gut, we call that the Cannonball Gut because it's about the only area on the estuary where you find cannibals, obviously. So hence the Cannonball Gut.
You find cannibals?
Yeah, lots of cannibals out there.
Really?
When we were kids, we try to carry them back, and sort of you get halfway back and just dump them.
Oh.
But there's two sizes. You know, one's just behind you there. There's two behind me.
Oh my god.
We're not sure if a ship sunk or it was. We just don't know. But there's one specific area, you know, covering by 500 or 600 meters, sort of where
that's
there's
amazing.
Cannibals. Yeah.
Do you ever find the remains of old boats or anything like that?
Yeah, there's one, the John, that was run aground on Gruggy Rocks in I think it was 1942. She was, I think, carrying coal, wrecked on the rocks, and she's well broken up now, but you can still identify the sort of riveted construction, the sort of, you know, portholes, the chain. We found a wooden boat, or parts of a wooden boat, in the sands, on the Bedouin sands. I was out there recently, actually, and she's covered up again, so...
You put that on Facebook, didn't
you? Yeah, yeah.
You just see the keel, was it? Yeah. Wasn't that bit?
No, that was a rib. We found that was just a rib. It is on Facebook somewhere, but that was just a rib we found. I was walking out there and I found a rib of a boat. But also, in another spot, there's a wooden boat... plenty of iron on her, sort of brackets, that's what we first spotted. Went back out there, and then more of the boat had been exposed, but a few weeks ago she'd been covered up again. So things on the sand, it's constantly changing.
It's a shifting sand out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it changes every day.
Yeah.
It depends which way the wind is blowing. And part of sort of the fishing is keeping an eye on things out of season. Sort of, you know, we like going out there, well, not all of us, but, you know, there's three or four of us sort of spend quite a bit of time out there, you know, and we sort of look after it, make sure there's no sort of netting and all the rest of it. But, you know, of interest is things you find, and, you know, we, you know, clay pipes, you know, Roman pottery, all sorts of things, you know, and it's just, you know, people have been out there forever, sort of.
Gosh.
A couple of weeks ago, it was quite funny, really. I was out there and I found a pelvic, like the bones of your pelvis, sort of thing.
And I'd
found a few things, and,
really?
And I was carrying it round, and sort of, I got back to the car, and I think it's something to do with target practice on airplanes, but again, I put it on Facebook, and I sent two photographs, look, to one of the boys. We got like a WhatsApp thing for photographs, so I send it to him. Well, don't pick me up a bit this afternoon. Anyway, within 15 minutes, Matthew, one of them, come back. He sent me like some pictures. It's human, and I'm looking at these pictures now, and I'm looking at the bone and. The sockets and all the rest of it.
That's weird, Martin.
I know.
What do you do with it?
I'm looking at it, I think, I'm looking at it. So I phoned, we got in contact with one of the Coast Guard guys, like, and Richard, he always wants, if you find a bomb, he wants to know and stuff like this. Keeps him in work, like, sort of. And so I said, Rich, I think, we're not sure, I said, but one of the boys has just sent me a picture and I've just found something. And might be human. He said, right, he said, we'll do you want us to come down now? I said, no, he said, not tonight, no. I can't have the police up my house or anything like that. So we'd sort it out tomorrow. So they come down to Blackrock, I brought it down there and they took it off. But only yesterday, I hadn't said nothing about it, look, but yesterday he texted and said it's not human remains. So it's not. God knows what it is.
I don't know. It is then. It'd be a big
cow or something, or sheep or something. God knows. But we didn't know. I didn't know. I didn't know.
No, so. You wouldn't, would you?
And the more you looked at the pictures, it looked.
The more convinced you were.
We all. And Matthew then texted me that evening, whilst I'm still out there, sort of. He said, I got it in the back of the car, I said. I've been carrying it around for an hour.
Oh,
and he said, how big is it? And I put a tape on it when I got home. And I sent in the measurements, and I woke it off my phone, but it was absolutely comical. Matthew was a big lump, and he's there in his kitchen now. He's measuring his. And then he said, I think it's human. And the way he said it, things to just really, but yeah, a day in the life. Sort of
Have
thing.
You seen bodies out there?
Richard found one, Richard found Derek Upton. He's found two. He found one on the Wye. He was kayaking up the Wye.
Oh, God.
And came across one, and he phoned the Coast Guard, and they sent Sarah out, and they said, can you hold on to it? He said, it's drifting away. He said, so he had to sort of patch all the way with a stick or something.
Oh,
really.
Dear. Oh, God.
And then, a few years back now, Richard was... Derek Upton, I don't know if you heard of him. He's a big guy. He was involved with a lot of the finds out there. He's kind of like a pill fella. And he used to take the archaeologists out there, and sort of off Goldcliff, where they found these footprints and all the rest of it. And he spent a lot of time out there. He knew it like the back of his hand, like a few of the rest of it. And I don't know what happened, I don't know the personal side of it, but anyway, eventually he went down there, he shot himself. so he shot himself down on the foreshore, and I think they found the rifle, but they couldn't find his body. So they searched around a bit for it, and sent a few search parties down there for a week or so. And no sign of him, they just assumed he'd gone. Anyway, my brother was down there doing what we do, sort of thing, and he found the body. Didn't have a mobile, so he walked up to the phone box and said he found the body, and then within seconds, it was police cars.
What a grim discovery, though. That must impact on him a bit,
not very nice. So I mean, there's Richard, when I was talking to him, he said there's still, when we said about the pelvic bone, like, and all the rest of it, he said there's still three or four in the county for, so there's people jumping off the bridges all over the place.
Do people jump off the bridge here? Do people jump off the bridge?
Oh, God, yeah, all the time.
What, the Severn Bridge?
Not the other one, generally,
really?
I think he said about the Clifton Bridge. I don't know, they put barriers up on the Clifton one, haven't they? It's trying to stop people jumping off.
Oh,
but
God.
They don't publicise it anymore, no.
Well, right, because it happens quite often.
No, it frequently puts it in people's minds, doesn't it? So
I
that people,
had no idea that happened.
Well, they're not jumping off every day, but there's several a year.
Oh,
sort of
sad.
I know.
Like, desperate people must feel to do that.
Yeah, it is sad. But,
changing subject.
Yeah.
About knots. Were you taught knots? Because you're using a boat in your mooring.
Sort of, obviously to knit the nets. I mean, you're using the sheep bend sort of to knit the nets, but...
You're using a sheep bend?
Sheep bend. Sheet, as in bed sheet. Sort of knitting the net around the wand and the needle and everything.
Yeah.
That's basically, as far as laying and fishing, that's the only knot you need to know. But because I got an interest in sort of boats, I mean, bow lines and stuff like that, clove hitches, it's all part of it, sort of boating.
But women, did you ever get women lay fishing?
No, never. There's no reason why they couldn't do it. I mean, it's no reason at all why they couldn't do it, but I've never known anybody, not a woman, do that, sort of, no.
What about words that go with the area, the estuary, Black Rock, the levels? Any particular words that, like you said about the guts, for example?
There's the monkey temp, which is behind a reef that's behind the hole, and it's quite an interesting story with that. What year it would have been, I just don't know, but around wartime, sort of that time, four soldiers stole the boat from the fishermen, and they tried to get a couple of girls from the village to sort of go in the boat with them, and in the end the girls didn't go. Anyway, the soldiers went off in the boat, and the guests from the bay, and rowed out into the estuary and landed on what they call the monkey dump at low tide. Got out the boat, started to walk around the reef, the island, didn't secure the boat. The tide started to come back in and wash the boat away. And Bob used to say that they watched them, they couldn't do nothing. Sort of the tide come in, and people saying, "Well, get another boat, go and get them." They just sort of said, "Too late."
Why?
Too late. They couldn't they couldn't get to them.
Because the tide is so strong?
Because the tide is coming in so fast.
Really? Oh.
That, and they just watched them.
Oh, how awful.
Yeah.
Oh, so, my God.
Drowned all of them. So all of them lost. So,
but was it called Monkey Tump before that, though?
No. We don't know where the name Monkey Tump come from, but generally, the monkey tump comes up, and it's an indication of the time when you sort of, when you start to see the monkey tump come up in the distance, that's when you set off from the bay to go to the hole in the boat to start fishing. There's another stone out there called, just again close to the hole, called the Sugar Cube. Sugar Cube. It's a big, massive square rock, and. There's two ways of getting out to the fishing if you're going to fish a grandstand in the hole, and that was either by boat and you're looking for the monkey tump coming up. If you're wading from the shore outwards, you stand on the edge of the water as the tide is going out, and then you start to see the top of the Sugar Cube appear as the tide is ebbing, and as soon as that the top of that stone starts to show, that's when you start to walk, to wade out. And that's what you're looking for all the time.
So you know exactly the right signs and timings. Mm. You're not just doing, you're reading it all the time, aren't you?
There's certain things you look for all the time. When you're fishing out in Gruggy, which is mid-channel, close to the main shipping channel, you can get cut off quite easily. And if you, when you're on foot, you know, you're going to drown if you don't come back at the right time. So what you're looking for is the tide rising in the shipping channel. That's what you do. You know, people, if you're looking around you, you think the tide is not coming in. But if you look, but what we do is pick out black. You're looking for black. Well, that's what they say. Look, you look for the black, which is stone. So as the tide is ebbing, if you can imagine, you get a rock shot. And then you wait a little bit longer, and then you look beyond that for another rock, and then another rock will start to show. And you keep looking beyond and beyond and beyond.
Yeah.
And you're looking down into the shipping channel, and then you're looking round, and then you look, glance back, and that rock is gone. So that's the only indication you've got of the tide coming in, because you can't see around you, you know, where you come from, into the east or the west, you're just looking at that. So when that, the tide is starting to rise now, and that's your first indication of you've got to be thinking of leaving. Sort of,
so you're reading that all the time, you're right there.
The most important thing is safety, you know, and they say if you see a fish at the end, you know, when the time comes to leave, you leave, you don't sort of hang about. So you're constantly reading the water, you know, looking at the turn of the tide. And when I was a kid, I mean, you could actually hear it. You know, I can always remember, you know, I'm going back a long time, but
before the bridges?
Before the bridge. If you hear the bridge now, you can hear the drone of the traffic.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot worse than that when in the fishing areas. And you could be stood in the hole and fishing, and I could be there with my eyes closed, and I would know exactly when to come back, because not only
you
are you looking,
know.
I would know exactly when to come back, because what happens in the estuary is that when the tide starts to flood, you don't sort of just pour in straight away. It's as if you reach a sort of a level. The tide starts to rise and rise and rise and rise, and then it reaches a point and it goes like that and starts to come in. So as long as it's flowing out, you will always hear the water going over the rocks. All right, so you're listening. So if you were blind, couldn't see, you would hear it, that rippling, that water going over the rocks. When everything becomes equal, for 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, there's no noise. So you know then, just before it's going to tip.
That's interesting. So that sense was heightened even more so when the bridge wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
You could hear it much better.
It was a definite sort of thing that you would listen for, the turn of the tide sort of thing. And, you know, but with the background noise, that's sort of lost now. If you really, really sort of listen for it, you can. Yeah, but it was, like you say, well defined and sort of. Mm. before the bridge was in.
So this is your chance now to tell me anything I haven't asked, or also what this place means to you.
The fishing.
Black Rock.
Well, you know, it means everything to me. It really does. It's sort of. Had I not been taken out fishing when I was a kid, I mean, none of this would be here. I never thought it at the time that I'd ever be here all these years trying to hang on to the fishing. It's a massive part of my life, sort of thing, now. And, you know, who would have ever thought it? You know, it was teetering on the brink of going, and the hard work that I've put in, my brother's put in, the other fishermen have put in, and sort of, it just means everything to me, really. And, you know, I just hope it stays forever. But, a massive part of my life, and it's become more so as I've got older, when you appreciate things that have, you know, it's a material world, but some things are worth more than money. And this, you know, is a gift to me, really. You know, is, you know, you get the, when the fishing time comes, you can't think of anything else, really. You're like drawn, like the moon draws the sort of, and the sun controls the tides, you know, the drag, the tide, that you sort of get drawn to the estuary as well with it all. It's a massive part. You know, I wouldn't say I'd be lost without it, but it'd be a crying shame if it went. Really would. Crying shame. There's no reason for it to go. You know, we have no effect on stock at all. I'm proud of the way things are now. I mean, it's become not just a big thing for me, it's become a big thing for the village, the county, everything. You know, I could never have imagined how things would have turned out. You know, heritage fishery, you know, sort of, you know, tourist attraction, I suppose. People, you know, we've given a lot back to Monmouthshire, sort of, in one way or another, and Wales. It does really mean everything to me. It really does. There's nothing else I'd rather be doing, really, these days.
Thank you. It's made me feel quite emotional.
But it is. I mean, it is, you know. It's quite an emotional subject, really. You know, there's a lot to lose. Sort of. We fought hard to keep it, and you know, we're still fighting, even now. I mean, who knows? It's out of my hands. I mean, you know, what will be, will be. I mean,
watch this space. We'll give it your best shot.
Yeah,
next week.
We do. Well, we certainly do that.
Thanks, Martin.
That's all right.
Thank you.
No problem.